You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. A husband's brutal assault charges are dropped. This while his wife, a young mom, Nikki Chain, is still missing. That's right, charges are dropped. Why? Because the state's chief witness cannot be found. Wow, I wonder why. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
A California mom of four, missing for over a month. Now her husband found torching a car.
Okay, too much, too fast. Drink another fire hydrant yet again, but that's not new in criminal cases. We learn in the last hours that the husband, Nikki's husband's car, coincidentally, catches on fire. A catalytic converter is blamed. Okay, that timing is really odd. And as I like to say, there is no coincidence in criminal law. There you go. These are the photos that came pouring into Crime Stories. What happened? His wife is missing. He is the defendant in a very, very serious aggravated assault case, or they may have termed it a simple assault. All I know is there are claims his wife Nikki's wrists and feet were bound. She was beaten horribly. Her mouth was covered in tape. Cold water was poured on her, and whoa, wait a minute. Do I have my dates right, Jackie? Just as they're supposed to go to court on that, she goes missing and his car is set on fire. Oh, excuse me, has a catalytic converter fire with him standing right there. Okay, what some people would suggest, the car was set on fire to get rid of evidence. Some people might suggest that. But we are told that the car's fire was started due to a catalytic converter issue. Now, I'm not a mechanic. I'm just a trial lawyer. If it doesn't have crime scene tape around it, I don't know anything about it. But I do know she's missing and the charges against him are dropped. Now, before we blame the prosecutor, can you prosecute a case where your chief witness to testify to what happened isn't there? What do we know about domestic violence? Beatings. Let's not call it domestic violence. That's certainly a euphemism, putting perfume on the pig. Domestic violence. It sounds like a Hallmark movie, right? Domestic. It's brutal. It's horrible. Women are murdered. But it all happens behind closed doors. I guarantee you, Nikki Chain would do everything she could not to let her children or her family know she's being beaten and abused. Of course, these are just allegations. The defendant remains innocent in the eyes of the court until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Let's just state that up front. Yeah, him. Tyler McKay, not a suspect. Let's be clear. And just before she is set to testify, she goes missing. Funny how that worked, right? And his car catches on fire. Again, thank you for being with us. You know, don't blame me for being angry. I've just seen this scenario play out over and over and over. A young mom goes missing. Children are left without a mother. And nothing ever happens. The only witness is Nikki Chain. And she's gone. You think she wanted her children to see what was happening to their mother? I doubt that very seriously. But let's get to the fire. Take a listen to this.
A fire at the home of missing mom of four, Nikki Saley McCain, brings out law enforcement, the media, and the Shasta County Fire Department. The Redding PD, Shasta County Sheriffs, and CAL FIRE LA all witnessed the growing blaze, and multiple officers spotted walking the property while it's still on fire. Firefighters create a fire line to stop the fire from spreading to nearby homes, but several vehicles on the property appear to be completely burned.
A catalytic converter, and several cars are burned. Okay. Joining me in All-Star Panel to make sense of what we know right now, straight out to Lauren Collin, investigative reporter and host of the Outlier podcast. Lauren Collin, how did multiple cars catch on fire from one catalytic converter problem? Or did they all have catalytic converter problems at the same time and spontaneously catch on fire?
No, Nancy, this is very suspect to me. So when the car caught on fire, CAL FIRE reported that they tried to contain it, but this fire spread 98 acres. That is not a small amount. I mean, I guess in terms of California fires, sure, you could argue that it's a small amount, but it went well onto other people's property.
Everybody on the panel, did you hear that? 98 acres, and it all starts with his car. Is that correct, Lauren Collin?
That's correct. His car. Their house, completely fine.
Beside me right now are Chloe and Kay. Chloe Saley and Kay Ford, these are Nikki's sisters joining us. Lauren Collin, I'm going to come back to you for all the facts. Ted DeBias with us, former prosecutor and author of Nobody Homicide Cases, and Brian Fitzgibbons, Director Operations USPA Nationwide Security, who first alerted me about the fire. But I want to go to Chloe and Kay. To you, Chloe, when did you find out about the fire on your sister's husband's property?
I actually found out pretty quick. My sister Kay had sent us a text message in the family group chat and said, Tyler's house is on fire. And immediately I was like, holy crap. There's no way the house is on fire.
Kay Ford joining me, Nikki's other sister. Kay, when did you learn about the fire?
We have some friends that live out there that have been keeping an eye on the house. So we found out pretty quickly, probably within 4 or 5 minutes of the fire starting. And we got video footage almost directly after that.
And Chloe, is this also Nikki's home?
Yes.
So both of them own it together, correct?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Back to you, Lauren Collin, joining us, investigative reporter. Back to the facts. What else can you tell me?
Nancy, this was incredibly interesting because Tyler McCain owned up to starting this fire, and he was just cited for negligently causing a fire and burning another's land. And as I said, he had to evacuate. I mean, there was an evacuation in the area, and about a month prior, another man did essentially the same thing with a lawnmower, but it was contained to 45 acres, and that man was arrested. So it kind of made me scratch my head as to why Tyler McCain wasn't arrested for this fire.
Lauren Collin, investigative reporter, you just stated that the husband in this case, Nikki's husband, owned up to starting the fire. What do you mean by that?
He admitted it right away. Even when news crews came to the scene, normally CAL FIRE doesn't give away who started it, who was involved. But Tyler McCain told the local news stations, yeah, it was me.
Okay, hold on just a moment. How did he reportedly start the fire, Lauren?
Well, as you said, he parked on dry grass. And that's another head scratcher. As a resident of California, a lifelong resident, you would think that he would know not to do that, especially with the weather as it is. So hot, essentially a desert.
Yeah, I'm very curious about how a catalytic converter actually starts a blaze like this. To Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, USPA Nationwide Security. Brian, how does that work?
Well, I'll piggyback on something that Lauren just said. There has been extreme heat out here in Redding. The temperatures on July 3rd, the day that the fire started, were up into 116 around the time of the fire. So, you know, exactly how that happens with a catalytic converter, I couldn't tell you. But, you know, this is certainly very suspicious. You know, the big question hanging over our heads right now is, was there anything of evidentiary value in that vehicle that was destroyed? And, you know, what was this, intentional or accidental? And as it stands right now, it looks very suspicious.
And just FYI, everybody, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has regulations in place to control the safety of catalytic converters, so they don't spontaneously catch on fire. So what, this one car in the middle of a search for a missing wife somehow evades the EPA regulations? Joining us, Ted DeBias out of D.C., former assistant U.S. attorney and author of Nobody Homicide Cases. Ted, what do you make of this?
Well, Nancy, I think it's highly suspicious. As you said, catalytic converters generally don't spontaneously combust. And as I think Lauren pointed out, you'd think someone who lived in California would know not to park their car on dry grass. More concerning is when you have a missing persons case that this is, the places the police are going to be interested in are a suspect's or a victim's car, the suspect or victim's place of living, their home, and the suspect's or missing person's property. Well, now two of those three things have been burned. The suspect's car has been burned, and now you have the suspect's property being burned. It sounds like the house was not burned, but that's not entirely clear at the moment. So to me, as I said, that is highly suspicious that these areas, which could be fruitful areas for evidence in either a missing person case or, God forbid, a nobody homicide case, those things are now burned. That's a fire is going to do significant damage to any type of forensic evidence. And the timing of it, as you said, is highly, highly suspicious.
Ted DeBias, I prosecuted a lot of arson cases and investigated more than I prosecuted. You know, it would catch on fire if an abnormal amount of fuel is fed to a catalyst. An abnormal amount of fuel. Now, let's think this through. An abnormal amount of fuel being fed. Once a fire originates in a car and the car burns to smithereens, how do you know if accelerant was poured where the catalytic converter would be? Because you expect to find a certain degree of accelerant, i.e. gas, in a car. So would that be deemed by arson investigators as normal to find fuel? What I'm trying to say is, how do I know it was a snafu on the part of the catalytic converter? It just spontaneously combusted? That doesn't make sense to me.
I think what the higher likelihood is if the car was intentionally placed over dry gas after being run, the undercarriage of the car is going to be hot. And it is possible that without any problem with the catalytic converter, simply putting a hot catalytic converter over dry grass, and Brian has pointed out how dry it has been out in California, well known the dangers of wildfires, that alone could start the fire. Whether that car was intentionally placed there or accidentally placed there, we don't know at the moment. But to cause this amount of a fire that damaged 96 acres is a significant fire. And it's hard to believe, given Tyler McCain's situation, that this is absolutely completely unintentional. I personally find that very surprising. When I found out, the first thing I thought of was, this appears to be an attempt to destroy evidence.
Again, Tyler McCain has not been named a suspect or a person of interest. Right now, this fire is deemed to have been caused by a catalytic converter.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Lauren Collin, now you said that Nikki's husband stated, or owned up to your words, starting the fire. Mm-hmm. But it was my understanding he owned up to having the vehicle on dry grass when it spontaneously combusted. He didn't say, I set it on fire to get rid of evidence.
You're absolutely correct. He stated to local reporters, the fire was ignited after he parked a car on dry grass. That was it. He never said, I started a fire.
Gotcha. You know, Brian Fitzgibbons, I hate when that happens. When you park your car and all of a sudden it just starts on, it spontaneously combusts. That's terrible. I want to point something out. Having worked also at the Federal Trade Commission, we worked very closely with EPA, and they have very, very rigid guidelines and regulations regarding any emission control system that it shall not in any way on its own put consumers at risk, including special insulation for catalytic reactors. That in itself has been specifically addressed by federal guidelines. Now, while fires may still occasionally happen, if an abnormal amount of fuel is fed to any catalyst, there could be a fire. What do you make of it, Fitzgibbons?
It's an amazing coincidence, Nancy, that this fire happened 2 days before a big court date for Tyler McCain. Okay, that's what sticks out to me. As you mentioned, the EPA has strict guidelines. Catalytic converters aren't spontaneously combusting all across the United States. This one just happened to combust 2 days before Tyler was due in court for these horrific charges of the violence and torture he committed against Nikki.
If Tyler's on the streets, no justice, no peace. If Tyler's on the streets, no justice, no peace. If Tyler's on the streets, where's my sister, Tyler?
No justice, no peace. When Tyler's on the street, no justice.
To Chloe Saley and Kate Ford. First to you, Chloe. Who is yelling out, where's my sister?
It was me.
Has he, Tyler McCain, not a suspect, spoken to you since Nikki went missing?
He spoke to me a couple times, and a lot of it was through text message and then a phone call.
I'm very curious. What did he have to say, Chloe?
One of the phone calls was he asked if he texted me and asked if he could see, if his mom could see the kids. Mm-hmm. And then another time was he wanted to wish his daughter a happy birthday.
Kay, where are the children?
The children are with our family.
Does he not want the children?
The children have been removed from the home a while back when a lot of the domestic violence started to escalate. So he does not, he is not able to see the children.
All I know is I would be lying on the front of the courthouse steps screaming to get my children back. But hey, that's just me. Let's get back to proving anything about the catalytic converter. Let me go to you, Ted DeBias. You've prosecuted a lot of cases as a former assistant U.S. attorney. You know, one of the hardest cases to prove is an arson case. You've got to first prove a crime was committed, because there are more accidental fires than there are arsons. So once you prove a crime has been committed, then you've got to prove who did it. So it sometimes can be a very difficult case to prove.
That's correct, Nancy. Here, though, we have the suspect in the arson, Tyler McCain, admitting that he parked his car on dry grass in a situation where the environment is incredibly dry, prone to fires, well known by everybody. And so, therefore, the who started the fire is pretty clear. How the fire started is also pretty clear, because it does seem as if the hot catalytic converter, maybe there was damage to the heat shield, maybe it didn't have a heat shield, that's what started the fire. The question becomes, Nancy, is did he do this intentionally or not? That's the difficult part. That's the difference between, as you know, having a prosecutable arson case versus having a case that is just an accidental fire, which seems to be at the moment what Cal Fire thinks it is. But did Cal Fire know the full background of Tyler McCain? Did they know he had a missing wife? Did they know that there were active searches going on for the wife? Did they know that there was perhaps evidentiary value in that car, evidentiary value in that property and in that home? And that's what's going to be the determination between, did Tyler McCain truly do this accidentally, or did he do it on purpose because he was hoping to destroy some evidence either in that car or elsewhere? That's going to be the difficult part in this arson investigation, Nancy.
Charges against the husband in this case, Tyler McCain, charges dropped. Why? Because the state's only witness to the alleged brutal assault on Nikki is Nikki, and Nikki's gone. Back to the catalytic converter fire. Again, as of right now, there is no arson claim. The timing, highly, highly unusual. But I want to clear one thing up. Lauren Conlon, and I'm going to circle back to Chloe Saley and Kay Ford, because we still don't have a clear understanding of how Nikki got on a Friday night, midnight, from her mother-in-law's house home to her place, and where her own vehicle, the Chevy Avalanche, plays into that. Lauren Conlon, joining us, investigative reporter, host of the Outlier podcast. Lauren, let's be clear. Nikki's vehicle, Chevy Avalanche, has been found on a remote county road. The vehicle that spontaneously caught on fire is the husband, Tyler McCain, not a suspect's vehicle. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I just want to point out a statement from Cal Fire as to why Tyler McCain was not arrested for this. Representatives shared that they have to have enough evidence to prove a level of criminal negligence necessary for an arrest based on factors set out in California law. And in this case, in the case of the fire at the McCain residence, factors were not present.
You know, to Ted DeBias joining us, veteran trial lawyer and author of No Body Homicides, that's now. Every arson case I have ever investigated and prosecuted takes time to develop. Every piece of that vehicle has to be taken apart and looked at. For instance, they're not all this easy. In one high-profile arson I prosecuted where a millionaire murdered his wife, I walked in and looked at where the fire dog, the accelerant dog, hit. You know, like a drug dog or a cadaver dog or a scent dog, they hit. I looked where he hit. It looked like, to the naked eye, someone had poured Coca-Cola all over the kitchen floor and it dried. That's what it looked like post-fire. I could see it. It was not hard to see at all that accelerant had been poured on the floor. He later claimed, wait for it, that he had been up late that night cleaning his wife's shoes with a shoe cleaner, much like fingernail polish, that contained toluene, which of course is an accelerant.
Correct.
Just let that soak in, pardon the pun. So what I'm telling you is, right there on the scene, you don't really know what happened. You have to investigate it painstakingly. DeBias?
Yes, that's exactly right, Nancy. Arson cases are notoriously tough to prosecute because they are very difficult scientific cases, forensic cases to look at and to determine how did this fire start. The case you talked about happened indoors, where at least you could see some things and take measurements. Outdoors, it's going to be incredibly difficult. You mentioned earlier about the volume of gasoline. Well, of course, in a car, there is an entire tank of gasoline. There might be 20, 15 gallons of fuel/accelerant there. That is going to make this investigation incredibly difficult.
Guys, what do we know? We know that her vehicle, and listen, I know I'm talking about the vehicles a lot. Why? Because the last thing we have of Nikki Chang, it's her Chevy Avalanche, and it's parked out on a remote county road. Let me understand something, Chloe Saley and Kay Ford, because I'm not getting an answer. You get a text from your sister, Nikki. She says, I'm taking my mother-in-law's vehicle back to her home. I'm getting a ride back to my home. Can we confirm that ever happened? Not the text, because you've already told me you believe the text was, in fact, from her. Who's supposed to bring her home? Did the mother-in-law's car make it to the mother-in-law's home? Did the mother-in-law see her? Or did she drop it off, hop in a car, and leave? What do you know about that, Chloe? Because that point is where all the stories diverge.
Yeah, so that part is very unclear. We don't know if she actually got a ride back to her home. We don't even know if she even made it to her mother-in-law's house, or if she did, what exactly happened right after that.
I don't understand that, Chloe. Where's the mother-in-law in this scenario? Because I would assume that she would be screaming into a microphone somewhere, Nikki is the mother of my grandchildren. She dropped my car off here at X time, and I didn't see her since. So-and-so picked her up, and that's the last time I saw her. I'm not hearing that. Why am I not hearing that, Chloe?
Same with me, too. We're all wondering the same thing as well, Nancy.
Okay, Chloe.
Yes.
Have you tried to contact the mother-in-law?
I did. I had asked her if Nikki took an Uber out from her house, and she did tell me, nope, not out of here.
Did she tell you Nikki brought the car?
She did not.
Did you ask her if Nikki brought the car?
I did not.
Okay, you know what, Chloe? I'm not attacking you, because I've looked back at things I did during stressful situations. I'm like, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Why didn't I fill in the blank? It could be anything. But you did call the mother-in-law and you did ask, how did she leave? And her response was, Nikki did not leave in an Uber. That's what she said. Did she say anything else?
That was it. That it was through text message. And then that was all. She just said she did not Uber out of here.
Okay, I've got a question. Do you have your cell phone with you right now, Chloe?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. Could you text her right now and ask her, did Nikki drop your car off that night?
Yes, I could do that.
Thank you. Thank you. We may or may not get an answer. We'll find out.
California mom of four missing for over a month. Hubby found with car torched.
Okay. Charges against the husband dropped. Straight out to Lauren Collin, investigative reporter. What happened?
Yes, on Friday, everybody was so disappointed as the DA, Stephanie Bridget, threw out the charges because she didn't have her star witness. Now, what's very confusing and perplexing to a lot of people is Stephanie Bridget actually formed the Family Violence Unit, which specializes in prosecuting offenders that harm the most vulnerable, like women and children. And so everybody was extremely disappointed in this decision by DA Bridget.
Trying to understand exactly what happened, take a listen to this.
The imminent domestic violence case against Tyler McCain, now dismissed. Why? Because Nikki Saley McCain, the alleged victim and state's only witness, is still mysteriously missing. Without Nikki, there's not enough evidence to go forward. The DA's office reserves all rights to refile the case in the future. Nikki's sister says Tyler McCain is escorted into court by police through a back door, and once charges are dismissed, he leaves through the back door and directly into a police van.
Joining me in All-Star Panel, I want to go to veteran, former prosecutor, now author, Ted DeBias. The only witness is missing.
Yes, that makes it very difficult.
I would argue the case could go forward as some sort of a dying declaration, which is a hearsay exception, an exception to the hearsay rule, based on what Nikki said to other people. There's been a lot of nobody cases prosecuted. You're the author. You wrote the book on nobody cases. That's the name of it. Nobody Homicide Cases, a practical guide to investigating, prosecuting, and winning cases when the victim is missing. How could the state go forward? Did they have to drop the charges?
So it's hard to say without knowing all the evidence the state had. Clearly not having the star witness, the victim in this case, makes it difficult. But as you know, Nancy, there are excited utterances. There are statements for treatment for medical purposes. There are, of course, possibly photographs of the injury. There are statements made to others that could come in a domestic violence case. So you'd have to look at all of the evidence and say, can this case go forward without the victim? As you know, in domestic violence cases, Nancy, it is not at all uncommon for a victim who is not missing, who is present, to decide they do not want to cooperate, right? It is very common in domestic violence cases for women, because women are typically the victim, to come forward and say, he's nice now, we don't have a problem, I don't want him to go to jail, he's the father of my children, he's the breadwinner, all of those things. And the cases still can go forward without that victim testifying. You have to look at the circumstances, though. And I'll add one other thing, Nancy. In most states, if a person procures the absence of a witness and the government can prove that, that can be used in the underlying assault case. In other words, if, big if, he's only a suspect, if Tyler McCain had something to do with Nikki's disappearance and the government can prove that, they can certainly move forward on the domestic violence charge as well as any type of murder case, if that's in fact what we're looking at here.
And you are right, Ted Tobias. He is a suspect in the brutal assault on Nikki, where her hands and feet were tied, tape was placed over her mouth, she was beaten severely, and cold water poured on her. Chloe Seeley, did Nikki ever discuss the beating with you?
Yes, she did.
What did she say?
She told me exactly what was in the report, and she did tell me she thought she was going to die.
You know what, Chloe? Those words must taste like dirt in your mouth. I've had so many cases, Chloe and Kay, where women have said to their friends or their sisters like you, one of these days he's going to kill me. He's going to kill me. Or if I go missing, he did it. I mean, and now here you are telling me that she said that. Kay Ford also joining me, Nikki's other beloved sister. Kay, did Nikki ever tell you what happened during that particular beating?
Yes. She did say that, like Chloe said, she thought that was going to be the end. That was going to be the time he did it. And she was scared to death. She was scared for her life. And she did state that the next time, if it were to ever happen again, could be it.
And this time, she actually pressed charges. She actually went for help.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Kay, I believe that assaults of this brutality, it's not the first time the woman has been attacked. You don't go from 0 to 160 mph in a matter of seconds. Kay, do you know of any prior assaults by McCain on Nikki?
There were several assaults on Nikki. She didn't feel comfortable, or like we've mentioned before, she didn't want to rip the family apart. So anytime the police would come, she would not make a report. And this time, because the beating was so severe, she endured it for 3 hours. Because of this incident, we pushed her to go to the hospital and make that report.
What did she say happened to her during the attack?
That she was bound and beaten, and that he tried to drown her, but he was too tired, so that's why he poured the water on her face. And she was able to get away because he was so exhausted from the beating that she was able to have a few moments that she ran away, that she escaped.
Where were the children when the aggravated assault occurred?
They were in the care of our family.
The search for Nikki Saley McCain continues, extending now onto tribal land. The Wind River Casino granted permission for family, friends, and concerned citizens to come together on 2 days to search the grounds and by plane. Chloe Saley, Nikki's sister, tells local news reporters that the area is close to where McCain was last seen or heard from. Other parts of tribal grounds remain private due to tribal sovereignty. Access has to be requested and granted before an area can be searched.
And that area has not been fully searched. I'm understanding the Redding Rancheria is telling the family they don't know if video exists. Really? What casino doesn't have video? They're better than NASA, for Pete's sake. Lauren Collins joining me, investigative reporter, host of The Outlier. What do we know about the Rancheria?
This is very interesting, Nancy. The Redding Rancheria tribe, Tyler McCain's family, essentially runs it. They have major ties to this. His mom's sister, his aunt, is the vice chairman, and other family members, their last name is Hayward, other family members are council members. So many locals that I've spoken to are very frustrated as to why they are not being more helpful in this search.
Chloe Saley and Kay Ford, let me go to you, Chloe. I did not realize the ties between Nikki's husband, Tyler McCain's family with the Rancheria. Now stating, did they actually say they don't know if they've got video?
So that's what I've been reading online as well, too. And I hope that's not true, because I know they have the best security system, or security and best camera system.
To Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, Director Operations, USPA Nationwide Security. You can find him at uspasecurity.com. Brian, help me out. Why are we not getting a full search of the Rancheria? Why are they saying they may not have video of the night she was there? I don't understand this.
Yeah, this is absolutely concerning, Nancy, especially with the familial ties that Tyler has to the leadership of the Rancheria. We all know that the casino will have unbelievable footage and security systems. We've heard and we're aware that the Rancheria has only allowed 2 days of searches to take place on tribal lands. We're at the point that these search parties need to have full access. Public shows of support from the Rancheria mean nothing at this point. They really need to open up access to the tribal lands.
A show of support, my rear end. I want to search the land. But at this point, let's be real, Brian Fitzgibbons. Time is passing. Every day is passing. Whoever is responsible for Nikki's disappearance has had plenty of time to move evidence. If it was ever on that tribal land, who are we kidding right now?
Correct. Every day that goes by, this investigation gets harder and harder. And, with the terrain out here as it is, it's as difficult as can be. So full access needs to be granted immediately.
But, of course, you cannot force tribal land owners. The federal government, much less local state government, cannot get in there. They can't get in there unless the tribal authorities allow it. Guys, if you know or even think you know anything about the disappearance of Nikki Chang, please dial 530-245-6540. Repeat, 530-245-6540. Or you can call NorCal Alliance for the Missing, 530-378-4491. There is a $10,000 reward. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.